Page 143, Chapter 16. When, nearly 2 years later, Obiereka paid another visit to his friend in exile, the circumstances were less happy. The missionaries had come to Umuofia. They had built their church there, won a handful of converts, and were already sending evangelists to the surrounding towns and villages. That was a source of great sorrow to the leaders of the clan. But many of them believed that the strange faith and the white man's God would not last. None of his converts was a man whose word was heeded in the assembly of the people. None of them was a man of title. They were mostly the kind of people that were called efulefu, worthless, empty men. The imagery of an efulefu in the language of the clan was a man who sold his machete and wore the sheath to battle. Chielo, the priestess of Agbala, called the converts the excrement of the clan, and the new faith was a mad dog that had come to eat it up. What moved Obiereka to visit Okonkwor was the sudden appearance of the latter's son, Wu Yi, among the missionaries in Umuofia. "What are you doing here?" Obiereka had asked, when after many difficulties the missionaries had allowed him to speak to the boy. Page 144. "I am one of them," replied Wu Yi. "How is your father?" Obiereka asked, not knowing what else to say. "I don't know. He's not my father," said Wu Yi unhappily. And so Obiereka went to Banta to see his friend, and he found that Okonkwor did not wish to speak about Wu Yi. It was only from Wu Yi's mother that he heard scraps of the story. The arrival of the missionaries had caused a considerable stir in the village of Banta. There were six of them, and one was a white man. Every man and woman came out to see the white man. Stories about these strange men had grown since one of them had been killed in Abame and his iron horse tied to the sacred silk cotton tree. And so everybody came to see the white man. It was the time of the year when everybody was at home. The harvest was over. When they had all gathered, the white man began to speak to them. He spoke through an interpreter who was an Igbo man, though his dialect was different and harsh to the ears of Mbanta. Many people laughed at his dialect and the way he used words strangely. Instead of saying myself, he always said my buttocks. But he was a man of commanding presence, and the clansmen listened to him. He said he was one of them, as they could see from his color and his language. The other four black men were also their brothers, although one of them did not speak Igbo. Page 145. The white man was also their brother, because they were all sons of God. And he told them about this new God, the creator of all the world and all the men and women. He told them that they worshipped false gods, gods of wood and stone. A deep murmur went through the crowd when he said this. He told them that the true God lived on high, and that all men, when they died, went before him for judgment. Evil men and all the heathen, who in their blindness bowed to wood and stone, were thrown into a fire that burned like palm oil. But good men, who worshipped the true God, lived forever in his happy kingdom. We have been sent by this great God to ask you to leave your wicked ways and false gods and turn to him so that you may be saved when you die, he said. Your buttocks understand our language, said someone lightheartedly, and the crowd laughed. What did he say? The white man asked his interpreter. But before he could answer, another man asked a question. Where is the white man's horse? He asked. The Igbo evangelists consulted among themselves and decided that the man probably meant bicycle. They told the white man, and he smiled benevolently. Tell them, he said, that I shall bring many iron horses when we have settled down among them. Some of them will even ride the iron horse themselves. This was interpreted to them, but very few of them heard. They were talking excitedly among themselves because the white man had said he was going to live among them. They had not thought about that. At this point, an old man said he had a question. "Which is this god of yours?" he asked. "The goddess of the earth? The god of the sky? Amadiora? Or the thunderbolt? Or what?" page 146. The interpreter spoke to the white man, and he immediately gave his answer. All the gods you have named are not gods at all. They are gods of deceit who tell you to kill your fellows and destroy innocent children. There is only one true God, and he has the earth, the sky, you and me and all of us. If we leave our gods and follow your God, asked another man, who will protect us from the anger of our neglected gods and ancestors? Your gods are not alive and cannot do you any harm, replied the white man. They are pieces of wood and stone. When this was interpreted to the men of Banta, they broke into derisive laughter. These men must be mad, they said to themselves. How could they say that Ani and Amadiora were harmless? And Idemili and Ogwugwu too? And some of them began to go away. Then the missionaries burst into song. It was one of those gay and rollicking tunes of evangelism which had the power of plucking at silent and dusty chords in the heart of an Igbo man. The interpreter explained each verse to the audience, some of whom now stood enthralled. It was a story of brothers who lived in darkness and in fear, ignorant of the love of God. It told of one sheep out on the hills, away from the gates of God and from the tender shepherd's care. After the singing, the interpreter spoke about the Son of God, whose name was Jesu Christi. Okonkwor, who only stayed in the hope that it might come to chasing the men out of the village or whipping them, now said, page 147, you told us with your own mouth that there was only one God. Now you talk about his son. He must have a wife, then. The crowd agreed. I did not say he had a wife, said the interpreter, somewhat lamely. Your buttocks said he had a son, said the joker. So he must have a wife, and all of them must have buttocks. The missionary ignored him and went on to talk about the Holy Trinity. At the end of it, Okonkwor was fully convinced that the man was mad. He shrugged his shoulders and went away to tap his afternoon palm wine. But there was a young lad who had been captivated. His name was Woye, Okonkwor's first son. It was not the mad logic of the Trinity that captivated him. He did not understand it. It was the poetry of the new religion, something felt in the marrow. The hymn about brothers who sat in darkness and in fear seemed to answer a vague and persistent question that haunted his young soul. The question of the twins crying in the bush, and the question of Ikemefuna, who was killed. He felt a relief within as the hymn poured into his parched soul. The words of the hymn were like the drops of frozen rain melting on the dry palate of the panting earth. Woye's callow mind was greatly puzzled. Page 148, Chapter 17. The missionaries spent their first 4 or 5 nights in the marketplace and went into the village in the morning to preach the gospel. They asked who the king of the village was, but the villagers told them that there was no king. We have men of high title and the chief priests and the elders, they said. It was not very easy getting the men of high title and the elders together after the excitement of the first day. But the missionaries persevered, and in the end they were received by the rulers of Banta. They asked for a plot of land to build their church. Every clan and village had its evil forest. In it were buried all those who died of the really evil diseases like leprosy and smallpox. It was also the dumping ground for the potent fetishes of great medicine men when they died. An evil forest was, therefore, alive with sinister forces and powers of darkness. It was such a forest that the rulers of Banta gave to the missionaries. They did not really want them in their clan, and so they made them that offer which nobody in his right senses would accept. Page 149. They want a piece of land to build their shrine, said Uchendu to his peers, when they consulted among themselves. We shall give them a piece of land. He paused, and there was a murmur of surprise and disagreement. Let us give them a portion of the evil forest. They boast about a victory over death. Let us give them a real battlefield in which to show their victory. They laughed and agreed, and sent for the missionaries, whom they had asked to leave them for a while, so that they might whisper together. They offered them as much of the evil forest as they cared to take, and to their greatest amazement, the missionaries thanked them and burst into song. "They do not understand," said some of the elders, "but they will understand when they go to their plot of land tomorrow morning." And they dispersed. The next morning the crazy men actually began to clear a part of the forest and to build their house. The inhabitants of Banta expected them all to be dead within 4 days. The first day passed, and the second, and third, and fourth, and none of them died. Everyone was puzzled. And then it became known that the white man's fetish had unbelievable power. It was said that he wore glasses on his eyes so that he could see and talk to evil spirits. Not long after, he won his first 3 converts. Although Woye had been attracted to the new faith from the very first day, he kept it secret. He dared not go too near the missionaries for fear of his father. But whenever they came to preach in the open marketplace or the village playground, Woye was there. Page 150. And he was already beginning to know some of the simple stories they told. "We have now built a church," said Mr. Kiaga, the interpreter, who was now in charge of the infant congregation. The white man had gone back to Umuofia, where he built his headquarters, and from where he paid regular visits to Mr. Kiaga's congregation at Banta. "We have now built a church," said Mr. Kiaga, "and we want you all to come in every 7th day to worship the true God." On the following Sunday, Woye passed and repassed the little red earth and thatch building without summoning enough courage to enter. He heard the voice of singing, and although it came from a handful of men, it was loud and confident. Their church stood on a circular clearing that looked like the open mouth of the evil forest. Was it waiting to snap its teeth together? After passing and repassing by the church, Woye returned home. It was well known among the people of Banta that their gods and ancestors were sometimes long-suffering and would deliberately allow a man to go on defying them. But even in such cases, they set their limit at 7 market weeks or 28 days. Beyond that limit, no man was suffered to go. And so excitement mounted in the village as the 7th week approached since the impudent missionaries built their church in the evil forest. The villagers were so certain about the doom that awaited these men that 1 or 2 converts thought it wise to suspend their allegiance to the new faith. Page 151. At last the day came by which all the missionaries should have died. But they were still alive, building a new red earth and thatch house for their teacher, Mr. Kiaga. That week they won a handful more converts. And for the first time they had a woman. Her name was Neka, the wife of Amadi, who was a prosperous farmer. She was very heavy with child. Neka had had 4 previous pregnancies and childbirths, but each time she had borne twins, and they had been immediately thrown away. Her husband and his family were already becoming highly critical of such a woman, and were not unduly perturbed when they found she had fled to join the Christians. It was a good riddance. One morning, Okonkwo's cousin, Amikwo, was passing by the church on his way from the neighboring village when he saw Woye among the Christians. He was greatly surprised, and when he got home he went straight to Okonkwo's hut and told him what he had seen. The women began to talk excitedly, but Okonkwo sat unmoved. It was late afternoon before Woye returned. He went into the obi and saluted his father, but he did not answer. Woye turned round to walk into the inner compound when his father, suddenly overcome with fury, sprang to his feet and gripped him by the neck. "Where have you been?" he stammered. Woye struggled to free himself from the choking grip. "Answer me," roared Okonkwo, "before I kill you." Page 152. He seized a heavy stick that lay on the dwarf wall and hit him 2 or 3 savage blows. "Answer me," he roared again. Woye stood looking at him and did not say a word.